It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show. Please welcome your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Good evening, thank you very much. Later on in the show, the government's new aid scheme for small businessmen, Platform Heels.
And we'll also be asking, if dolphins are so clever, why don't they avoid Japan? And what have you been up to this week, Nick?
I've been working on a feature role in a big commercial.
Really? What's it for?
Oh, it's a commercial for crisps. Great part. A singing part, actually, but the people at home don't want to hear.
What sort of singing part?
Oh, well, I play a potato. Anyway, now it's
a
time
what?
For... A potato. Anyway, now it's
a potato?
Time...
A potato? Oh, well, that's a real artistic challenge, that is, isn't it? I suppose you employed the techniques of method acting, did you? Buried yourself in the ground for 6 weeks, you know. A big part as a potato.
I was a singing potato.
Oh, singing. Oh, well, there you go. If they ever make a musical about the Great Irish Famine, you're laughing, aren't you? What did you sing?
Well, I don't want
to... Come on, what did you sing?
I sang...
We want to be Simpsons crisps. We want to be Simpsons crisps.
Pathetic.
Yeah, well, I don't see anyone rushing to ask you to appear in their ads, wild man of Borneo.
I don't actually do ads on principle, actually.
Oh, no? Not even if you got 4,000 quid for being a singing potato?
The amount's immaterial. It's a clear conscience, you see. You can't put a price on that. Anyway, it's time for our archive feature, The March of Time, which looks at how much did you say?
4,000 quid.
How do you do that funny voice?
It's a gift, really.
The March of Time. The year is 1936. Baldwin is Prime Minister, Fred Perry wins Wimbledon, and Benny Green is already nostalgic for 1935. In America, Roosevelt offers the New Deal, and in England, people are actually enjoying watching Arsenal. But in the private rooms of Buckingham Palace, Queen Mary, the matriarch of the royal family, receives her son, Edward the King.
Well, Edward?
Yes, Mother?
Have you reached a decision?
Yes, Mother. I want to marry Mrs. Simpson.
You can't marry her, Edward. She's totally unsuitable to be Queen of England.
Oh, just because she's a commoner?
No.
Oh, I see. It's because she happens to be divorced.
No, it's not that. The point is, she's American. We can't have an American queen.
I see no problem.
Oh, come on, Edward. You know what those Yanks are like. I can just see her now blurting out, gee, this is so traditional, during the King's speech. Shouting, woo, yeah, go for it, as she distributes the Maundy money. In her golfing trousers. Crying when she's crowned and thanking all those wonderful people who made it possible.
Don't exaggerate, Mother. Mrs. Simpson isn't stupid.
Well, she's American. And another thing, what would she be called? Queen Wallace? Mother of Elmer, Prince of Wales, and Her Royal Highness Princess Cindy. Now listen, Edward. There must be someone else you could marry.
Oh.
And what about that Barbara Cartland woman?
There is someone.
Yes.
A rather demure little filly.
Good, what's her name?
Vicky Hodge.
Soon the crisis was the world's biggest news story. The Express urged the King to marry Mrs. Simpson. The New York Times described her as a courageous woman. And Perry Match said she was a voodoo priestess who'd had 3 children by a buffalo. Around the halls, comedians made topical jokes about the royal romance.
Who was that lady I saw you with last week in the West Indies, Eddie?
That was no lady. That was Wally Simpson.
Jamaica?
No, she wants to marry the king.
And it wasn't just little and large. Max Miller joked about the royal couple, too.
What about the king, eh? What about the king, eh, lady? Why is the king like a pair of knickers? One yank and he's off. Well, he is, isn't he? He is, he is, he is.
Soon the public grew bored with Edward's dilemma. Summer came and Europe was in uproar once again. Civil war broke out in Spain, where Ernest Hemingway deliberately got himself shot so he could write a book about it. The storm clouds gathered ominously. Churchill prepared himself for war.
We shall argue with them on the beaches. We shall quibble with them on the landing grounds. We shall shortchange them in the pubs. You know, it's still not right, Clemmy, I'm sorry.
Meanwhile, in Moscow...
Gorbarovitch, Dostoevsky.
Stalin had got as far as the letter G in the E-to-K directory. And in Grantham, Lincolnshire, a 10-year-old Margaret Roberts was developing a crush on the 62-year-old Ronald Reagan. Meanwhile, the king, Edward, finally abdicated and moved to France. So it was a bad year for him all round, really. And time marches on.
Later on, we'll be visiting the Molehill near Rotterdam, which has become Holland's biggest tourist attraction.
Yeah. And we'll be talking to the Harley Street surgeon who provides solace for hypochondriacs by giving them terminal diseases. But now it's time for...
Don't talk to me about war!
Mushtaq, I didn't say war, I said for.
War is a terrible thing!
Mushtaq, you're the doorman, so get back on the door.
War is not what it used to be. It's turned really sloppy and informal. Nobody dresses up for war anymore. It's all casual gear. Jeans, T-shirts, balaclavas and training shoes. If you wear a military uniform, everybody points and laughs at you as if you're wearing flares.
Yeah, actually, I mean...
Nowadays, it's all so bloody sneaky. You're sitting at home watching the news. Some sod hits you with an Exocet missile and you wonder if it was something you said.
Yeah, well, we can't talk about missiles.
I spit on missiles. Yeah. You know what happened to me? I spent 2 years building an extension on my house in Beirut, okay? Exactly! Suddenly, bang! Now I have to live in the extension while I rebuild the house!
Yeah. The point is...
All around you, it gets so confusing. I mean, take Lebanon, okay? You've got Maronites, Druze militia, Syrian-backed Palestinians, Libyan-backed Palestinians, Palestinian-backed Palestinians, Israeli-backed Christians, Libyan-backed Manchester United supporters. But you can't tell the difference between any of them because nobody wears uniforms, just bloody T-shirts. So don't talk to me about war.
Yeah. Actually, Mushtaq, I never said the word war. I said four.
Four. Oh. Sorry.
That's okay. No, don't worry about it. Oh, that Mushtaq. God, he can talk.
Oh, no. Well, don't talk to me about people who can talk, mate. I was driving up the A1 the other day, and I stopped to pick up this hitchhiker.
Fatal.
Hello there. Can I give you a lift?
Yes, and about time, too.
Oh, you've been waiting a while, then.
I've been standing here for nearly 10 minutes. Do you know, several cars went past and ignored me. I'm absolutely furious, yes.
Uh-huh. Where are you going? I'm going as far as Leeds.
I don't want to go to Leeds. I want to go to Penzance, of course.
Ah, now you're on the wrong road for Penzance. Maybe
never mind. Leeds will do. I expect people will like me just as much in Leeds as they would in Penzance. I'm a very likable person, you know.
Really?
Yes. Can you lend me some money?
No.
I see. Won't lend an old war hero the price of a hot meal, eh?
War hero?
I was dropped over France, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they said, go and make the Germans' lives a misery and then push me out of the plane. And the Gestapo captured me.
The Gestapo?
And they said you'd better start talking, and so I did, because the Gestapo could be very rough, you know.
Yeah,
ooh,
yeah,
very rough,
I had heard.
Yes.
Very
In
rough.
Fact, they were so rough, they used to drink red wine without letting it breathe first.
My God.
Absolutely. And they beat me unmercifully.
Really?
Oh, yes, but I rather liked that because I went to a public school, you see.
I see.
So I started talking and talking and talking until eventually they turned me over to the Italians.
I see.
Oh, yes, and then the Italians were so angry with the Germans for turning me over that they changed sides. So, in fact, I won the war single-handedly. Yes. Why are you stopping?
Well, I'm going to pick up that woman. Can I give you a lift?
Thanks. Do you mind taking my puppy as well?
Madam, my chauffeur and I would be delighted.
Chauffeur?
Most kind. Shiva, come on, boy.
He's quite big, isn't he?
He will be when he grows up.
Mm. What kind of dog is he?
A Bengal elephant hound. They use him in India for bringing down rogue elephants.
Do you think you could make him sit on the floor?
He is sitting on the floor. Lewis, you go in front if you want to.
Ah! I can't breathe!
He likes to be in front. He likes to see where he's going.
Yeah, well, so do I. Oh, my God. Sorry, mate. Sorry.
He likes you. Oh, look. He likes you so much, he's marking his territory.
Good Lord. He must be a very supple doggy to get his leg that high in this confined space.
Oh, no.
Luckily, I managed to dump him at the next motorway services.
How?
Well, I gave the old boy 10 pence and he got into a long argument with the speak your weight machine.
All right. What about the dog?
Well, while the woman was in the loo, I, tied him to the back of a juggernaut.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen the back wheels get torn off a juggernaut before.
With me now, I have the literary expert, Professor Stephen Cummings, who's just brought out a biography of Jane Austen.
Good evening, Andy.
Good evening, Professor.
Yes, yes.
Now, what is it about Jane Austen that first drew you to her?
Well, I think it was her skill as a writer. She is, without any doubt, the most elegant writer of narrative prose. And I think this is best illustrated with a reading from one of her books, which we can hear now.
In the weeks that followed, Lydia remained at the vicarage, blessed with the effusive company of the Reverend's good wife, who bestowed upon Lydia the benefit of all her universal wisdoms concerning matters of the heart. Every morning, Lydia would seek sanctuary in the library, until one such morning her reflections were interrupted by the sound of a carriage. She heard a knock at the door, and then a voice which she knew as well as her own. Into the library stepped Mr. Darcy. His air was courteous and charming, and altogether much changed from their last encounter at Lyme Regis. "I hope you will excuse the presumption of an unannounced visit," he said, and with that tore open Lydia's blouse. Her gypsy eyes blazed like hot coals as he thrust her onto the yielding sheets, and she felt his moist lips cleave to her lily-white breasts. He surged over her like a tidal wave of rampant animal passion, and they fused in a cataclysm of sublime ecstasy, and her loins exploded with joy.
Yes, yes. It's not your run-of-the-mill Jane Austen, is it? I mean, it's usually 200 pages before they get to shake hands.
Yes. Well, I think like many artists, Austen went through a period when, in the widest possible stylistic and creative sense, she needed the money.
Oh, I see. Right.
And this particular novel, Lust in the Sand, outsold Pride and Prejudice 50 times over. But she wrote it purely for cynical commercial reasons, and I suppose its modern equivalent would be, say, somebody writing for Little and Large.
Who says I wrote for Little and Large?
I'm sorry?
Have you been talking to Nick?
No, I just...
Well, then why pick Little and Large?
Well, just a general example of something crass and lowbrow. I mean, I could just as easily have picked, I don't know, Bernie Winters?
You have been talking to Nick.
No, no, I...
Well, then why pick Bernie Winters? I have never written for Bernie Winters.
Well, I'm just...
All right, I admit it. I wrote for Bernie Winters. There, you satisfied? What was I supposed to do? I was desperate. You don't know what it's like. There was no money coming in. The woman I love needed an operation. And yes, oh, yes... I wrote a routine built around schnorbits, but I was only obeying orders. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I wrote for Bernie.
Well, we leave the million-pound radio show for a moment for medical reasons, which gives me an opportunity to tell you about some of the things coming your way on Radio 4. Tomorrow at 3, there's afternoon theatre. It's the story of a working-class family in Derbyshire in the 1920s.
Oh, life is so hard, Mother. It's so hard.
But the road is hard for the likes of us. And the road is long. And there are no shortcuts, husband. It's the road of life, and we can't turn off, even if we want to.
Aye. I know you're right, but the road is long and hard.
That's The Long Hard Road. A play about a working-class family who work very hard all their lives and then die of consumption. At 6:30, you can hear the topical quiz about the news, news quiz, in which celebrities make topical, witty remarks and nobody mentions Northern Ireland. But now it's back to the million-pound radio show.
Now, as you know, listeners, as scourges of the establishment, Nick and I are often sent explosive classified material, and we'd like you to listen now to this tape recording.
The South African ambassador's here to see you, Minister.
Oh, good. Van der Merwe, do come in. Now, bad news, I'm afraid. We can't resist Commonwealth pressure for much longer. Looks like we're going to have to impose some sanctions.
Now, wait a minute.
Now, if you ask me, you chaps have brought it upon yourselves.
Oh, come on, we're trying very hard to reform. We've abolished apartheid, got a totally new policy.
Called Hyde Apart.
Yes.
Your PR is so bad. I mean, for a start, there's the torture. I mean, for God's sake, cut down. Or at least get double glazing in your detention centres. I mean, you see, people in this country are funny about torture. And I'm afraid they don't like Nazis either.
How do you mean?
Well, we don't feel it was very tactful for your government to declare a national holiday when Kurt Waldheim won the Austrian elections.
Oh, come on!
Or to name a street after Dr. Mengele. None of it helps, you see.
Oh, but that's...
Now, none of this would matter so much if it wasn't for the basic problem of South Africa, which is that... Well, you're all so bloody unpleasant.
How do you mean unpleasant?
Unpleasant. Ugly. Even your accents are ugly. Sounds like you're gobbing all the time. Then there's the border raids, the police brutality.
Ah, but our police are beating up white people now as well.
Too little too late, I'm afraid. No, I'm sorry. We're imposing sanctions. We're going to impose a total ban on imports of news reports. We're going to ban all coloured emigration from this country to South Africa. We're going to have a total ban on more than 9 South Africans playing cricket for England at the same time. And we're going to vehemently back the Don't Buy South African Spoons campaign. Do I make myself clear?
Perfectly clear, Minister. And thank you.
Glass of sherry?
South African?
Of course.
Lovely.
But with me now, I have Jermaine Anderson, and Jermaine is the chairperson of the Militant Vegetarians Front. Now, Jermaine, what sort of protests does your organisation make?
Well, we believe that meat is murder, and that anyone who eats meat is a murderer. And should be murdered.
That's quite a militant line to take, really, isn't it?
Yes, but we believe in practical action. I mean, for instance, take this Jersey cow.
Yes, yes, it's a lovely animal.
Which we've taught karate. And various martial arts of self-defence.
Yeah. Do you think you could get its hoof off my throat?
Not until you renounce meat.
I renounce meat.
Okay, Daisy, release him.
Moo!
You okay?
Yeah, it's just Daisy's giving me a bit of a black eye.
Oh, yeah. It's a bit of a shiner.
Ah, it's okay. I'll put some steak on it or something.
Moo!
Well, Nick is... Yeah. With you in a minute, Nick. Well, while Nick's being beaten up by a Jersey cow there, why don't I take this opportunity to tell you about the very interesting jury service I did this week.
Members of the jury, have you reached a verdict on which you are all agreed?
We have, Your Honour.
And what is that verdict?
Guilty as hell, Your Honour.
A just guilty will suffice.
Sorry, Your Honour, guilty. Very, 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 very guilty.
Thank you, yes. I shall now pass sentence. Now...
Your Honour.
What is it?
On behalf of the law-abiding British public, may I urge the sternest possible sentence? Life imprisonment at the very least, preferably on Robben Island.
A, Robben Island does not belong to Her Majesty's government, and B, the accused is a 76-year-old woman charged with stealing a pair of nylons from Woolworths.
If she does not get life, Your Honour, there's not a Woolworths in the land that will be safe... from ruthless hordes of little old ladies, spreading yet further this plague of which I myself have personal experience.
Yes, thank
Only
you, but...
Only this week, Your Honour, I experienced the violation of theft when skilled and hardened burglars broke into my flat and stole one of my Sabutio players.
Sabutio?
Yes, it's a game, Your Honour, where you flick little plastic footballers at a huge ball. which, proportionately to scale, would crush all the players to death. But it's a very... it's a very skillful game. But now my Chelsea team only have 10 players.
Yes, yes. Thank you. I'm not imprisoning a little old lady over one Sabutio player.
Your Honour?
What is it, Clerk of the Court?
I had my key ring knit yesterday.
So?
Well, he's right, isn't he?
I had one of my day glow socks gone missing.
Order!
Four of my socks are disappeared. I reckon it's the work of a gang.
It must be. Yeah.
Bring back the bird.
Order! Order! This little old lady has nothing to do with the crime wave.
She's a symptom, Your
Make
Honour.
Make an example of it.
Yes, yeah. we're too soft with them. Yeah.
Members of the jury, members of the foreman, put that rope away. I shall now pass sentence. Now, looking at the medical evidence from your GP, I see... What are my glasses? They were there. I put them down there. Who's had them away? Honestly, it makes me so cross. You can't put anything down these days, can you, eh? Brand new they were. God, what a country! What a country! Where was I?
Passing sentence, Your Honour.
Oh, yes. You will be taken from this place to a place of execution where you will suffer death by hanging and may God have no mercy on you.
And that's it. Next week, we'll be playing Call My Bluff. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden will be attempting to define quaint, archaic words like pummybonk, grimbledune, and job.
And we'll be looking at the kidney donor kebab card. For people who want to leave their bodies to Greek takeaways.
Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Harry Enfield. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.
Well, that was the Million Pound Radio Show. Later tonight on Radio 4, it's Desert Island Discs. Tonight's Marooned Islander is Bernard Manning. And for the first time, by popular demand, the BBC have used a real desert island. But now on Radio 4, it's time to boldly go where no one has gone before with Space Mission.
Space Mission, starring Roger Humphreys as Captain Mark Trent.
The year 2019. The space fighter Athena has landed on an uncharted planet, and Captain Mark Trent, along with Space Ensign Boyd and Chief Engineer Harker, have set off to explore the surface of the planet.
Anything on the space sensors, Chief?
No, Captain. God, what a strange planet this is. The atmosphere is unlike anything I've ever seen. It's a sort of green haze.
That's because you've sneezed all over the inside of your helmet. Ensign Boyd, anything on the space scanners?
No, Captain. No signs of intelligent life.
Yaki da boyo, isn't it?
Oh, my God! It's a Welshman! Run for it!
It's too late! He's seen us!
Boyd! You've shot him!
Yes.
Well done. Can't be too careful. Let's get back to the ship. Quickly, there might be some more of them.
There's a life form approaching on the horizon, Captain.
Let's have a look through the space scope.
Can you make it out, Captain?
Well, it's on a wheeled form of transport. It's got blue and white hoops across its chest and round its neck. Oh, my God. It's a French onion seller.
Hello, mes amis. Oh, professeur, alors.
Got him. Oh, my God.
What?
Well, don't you realize? A singing Welshman? A French onion seller? We've landed on a planet populated entirely by stereotypes.
Stereotypes, schmereotypes, what does it matter? I'll run you up a nice suit.
Holy space devils, they're everywhere.
Heck, Bruce, my mouth's as dry as a dead dingo's donga.
We must get back to the space fighter. Come on, run!
What's happening?
Jumping space jackals. We're being transported molecule by molecule. What do you want with us?
We are Zathons. Many space eons ago, we conquered this planet. The people of this planet were like you then. individualistic, and unpredictable.
So we had to reduce them to basic stereotypes to create an ordered world.
But
now you have arrived, uninvited, to destroy that order.
Our sensors have probed your ship and have discovered it contains many dangerous elements. Scotsmen who buy other people drinks.
Women who are good drivers.
And a West Indian with no sense of rhythm.
We cannot allow you to destabilize our ordered world. We must stereotype you.
I once saw an episode of Star Trek where Captain Kirk faced a similar situation, and he made a moving speech about the human spirit.
Of course, thank you.
Take them to the Stereotron.
Wait! You cannot turn us into stereotypes. We humans are by our very nature diverse. Blessed with that ultimate gift, liberty.
Oh, he's already been in the Stereotron.
No, I am an individual. Like all humans, I have freedom of choice.
Ah, yes, we've seen this freedom of choice. You chose your current world president, Annika Rice.
Yes, but...
You chose nuclear power, chemical warfare, and 19 million of you chose to watch The Price is Right. And you say this freedom of choice is good.
Yes, well,
Into the Stereotron with them, the woman first.
Captain, help! Oh, no! Help me!
Well, where the hell have you been? What time did you call this? Mother was right about you. I should never have married you.
Oh, no! A nagging housewife!
Indeed, Captain, and now Chief Engineer.
Get your hands off me!
Chief!
I said get your hands off me!
Oh, what's it, me old cock? Fancy a cup of rosy Lee? Oh, my old man.
You fiend! You've turned him into a cheerful cockney! He might as well be dead!
Now it's your turn, Captain.
No! No! No!
Can Captain Trent escape, or will they turn him into a Pakistani who wobbles his head from side to side? Why do all aliens talk very slowly? And will the crew continue to obey a captain who sticks the word space on the front of everything in a pathetic attempt to sound futuristic? Find out in next week's Space Mission!